This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, fresh from the West Coast, we have Rick Kacha. He's the Vice President of Strategy for a company called Delphix. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning, John. Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Kind of a new name in the Washington, D.C. area because of a relatively new company. It's spelled D-E-L-P-H-I-X. And what Delphix does is it makes life easier for my software developers listening, doesn't it? I mean, that bottom line.
Absolutely. And applications are more important than ever, and developers are becoming the kings, and so making their life better is a good thing.
Maybe you should have that in your business card. We make life easier for application developers out there who are beating their heads against the wall at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Maybe eliminate some of that. Rick, tell us a little about your background and how you wound up working for Delphix, please.
Sure thing. So I've been in technology one way or another for the last 25 years. I started my career in systems integration at the big integrators, Accenture, then called Anderson Consulting. I moved into a variety of technical startups. My last one was a company called ArcSight, which is pretty big in the federal government. It was actually the only software company to IPO in 2008. It was acquired by Hewlett-Packard in 2010 for $1.5 billion. And I was looking for something to do after that. I looked at Delphix and I thought, this thing, if this works, this is going to be big. It's got one of the biggest markets I've ever seen and biggest opportunities. Been there 3 years now and it's growing like a weed.
Well, I think people know about ArcSight, and I think that maybe is the touchstone to understand what this product's all about. So, a company based in California, founded in 2008. And so what's the better mousetrap? What's the pitch? Why should we listen to this interview?
Sure. So, well, Delphix basically helps our customers change the way they think about data. And really, data is at the core of what most organizations do. If they don't have the data they need, they can't make decisions. If they don't have the data they need, they can't test their applications. They can't answer questions. They just can't do what they need to do. So there's been lots of advances in things around data, but there have been very few advances around increasing agility of getting the data where you need it to go. And Delphix does that. And our customers in the commercial, federal, and state government sides all see huge increases in their ability to manage data and handle growing data. And so that's the benefit.
I've worked with software developers for the last 8-10 years. And this afternoon, I'm going to have a meeting with some software developers. And they are a very unusual breed. They're very, very detail-oriented, almost to the point of perfection. And anything you can do to make their life easier, the project is going to get done. And so that's what we're talking about today. So essentially, the company started off with helping out software developers who had Oracle databases, and they were having problems with delays in testing and integration at the end of the project. Is that right? Is that how it started off?
Yeah, the way I would put it is, you know, we're living in an application economy, whether you access your bank on your phone or you access and pay your taxes online. Applications drive what people do more and more. Those require development and, more importantly, lots of testing. Most of those apps live on big databases. Databases have gotten so big that it's been hard to make those things available for people to test on. So they test with fake data or old data, and then they put these applications in production and the things crash. Try and file your taxes and something falls. Okay, the application failed. I wish they'd tested it better. Try and do something on your phone. It crashes. Wish they'd tested it better. So basically, we want to be able to get the data to the people who need it to test or report, and Delphix makes that happen.
I was at an event a couple days back, and I asked the audience how many people remember something called a Bernoulli box. And I had a lot of hands. You know, Ron Ross raised his hand, all people in the panel raised. Because back in the day, you probably remember this, maybe you're too young, but you'd have a 5-megabyte hard drive and you'd back it up on a Bernoulli box. It was a big deal. And I think it's gotten to the case where some databases and enterprise organizations are a terabyte of data. And if you want to take and give that to a tester, and there's more than 20 testers out there. It gets to be almost unwieldy. You can't get a bigger boat. You just have to figure out a different way to transfer the data and give it to testers and make sure they have the same data.
Yeah, I think it's actually, I think you're actually off by a zero or two. Most of the organizations are managing petabytes of data.
Oh.
And, you know, my first computer had a 10 megabyte hard drive.
Whoa.
And I couldn't figure out how to fill it. You know, now I send 10 megabyte emails to people. And so we talk to customers who their databases they test on are 10 terabytes. And they have, you know, giving that to people to test on simply takes too much time and costs too much money. So we can't test the way we need to test. So it's all about how do I take ever-growing amounts of data and get it where it needs to go.
In traditional agile software development, you do these things called iterations, where you'd have a small chunk of the project would be defined and tested at the same time, and in different environments do this differently. But the idea is you'd have a full orb view of the project. With the size of databases now, that tends to get split up, and you may have 20 testers testing an environment. And it may work for them, but when it's all unified, put together, the dependencies could to break, and all of a sudden, you don't have a valid test.
Yeah, people have got tools to, everyone wants to be more agile and wants to develop software in a more agile manner, and they have tools to fix just about everything except the data. And databases and data are the anchor that hold back agile development. I'll give you an example. One customer, just setting up the databases for the project takes 2 weeks. Doesn't matter how big the project is, 2 weeks. Every refresh of the data, so that people have fresh data to test on, takes a week. So you can't be agile if your guys can write code in a day and then sit around and wait for a week to get the data they need. You just, you know, it's a drag.
Well, not with the salaries you have to pay them, too.
I mean. Exactly. So, you know, and having expensive developers or expensive contractors who bill by the hour waiting around for weeks is just not tenable. So you want to be able to remove that anchor and remove that drag and have projects really move quickly.
When I first started using the word provisioning, I thought of a restaurant and provisioning with food, and then I switched into, oh yeah, for telephone systems, it had to be provisioned. And now increasingly in data centers, using provision to set up databases like this.
Yeah.
And what happens to an iteration if it takes 2 weeks? You just can't sit back and wait for your customer to give you feedback in those 2 weeks. Somehow it's got to be done quicker. And what your company proposes is that, well, we have a system that allows to come up with a virtual database or an emulation of the database that is whole. Is that right?
Yeah. So let me talk about what provisioning is like without Delphix. Someone files a help desk ticket that sits in the system for a day or two. Then someone needs to approve it. Manager approves the task, goes off to a storage guy who allocates some storage. That takes a day. Then it goes to a server guy who has to approve the ticket. Takes a day. Goes to a database administrator. Takes a couple of days. Another approval here or there. A week later, the process is done. You get a notification that your database is there. Put Delphix in. Someone goes to the Delphix console. They hit provision me a new database. It spins around for a minute, and a minute later, they've got a full copy of the database. That entire process is removed. So, you know, just imagine if things that used to take you a week now take you 10 minutes, how much more productive a team can be.
So the suggestion here is database virtualization. Is that the phrase that fits your solution here?
Yeah, technically, we talk about virtualizing the data inside a database. And today, it sits in big, you know, refrigerator-sized storage arrays. And every time you want to make a copy of something, you physically duplicate the whole thing. That can take a day just to make a copy, just to move the bits around. So we found that in all the copies, most of the data is the same. There's no reason to duplicate it. So if you can find a way to share data across all the, you know, the instances, you can do it very quickly. And so that's virtualizing data in databases.
On your website at delphix.com, Delphix, talk about fresh data. Well, hey, it's fresh. I guess it's current or fresh, or what does that term mean for you?
Yeah, so actually just before this, I just came from a federal contractor, and they talked about one of their projects. And they said, when we're doing testing, this is around an ERP and financial system, right? So ERP, where they're managing all the contractors. They said, it's so hard to the data's changing all the time. People are hired, they're fired, they have new roles, they have new projects. It's so hard to get that changing data to our testers that when they're testing new code, they have data that, because we're just too hard to refresh this. So we're going against data that's a month old. So we may have bugs. There may be new corner cases or errors in the data and we don't catch it. And then the system goes live and that person logs in and the system crashes. So having the freshest data allows you to catch bugs and allows you to catch corner cases. And it's simply too hard for most organizations to take the latest stuff that's running in production and give that to all the people who need it.
You know, from my perspective, what I see is I see many agencies and companies trying to make a move to the cloud. And so they may have a data center and they have an application that's working and they don't want to flip a switch and move to the cloud. What they might want to do is take a environment and test it in a new environment. And this is a nice little transition tool too, I would think. If your agency is moving to the cloud, well, maybe test out the dependencies ahead of time.
Yeah. So one of the biggest drivers in federal IT is this notion of consolidating data centers and cloud first. Sounds great. It's actually really hard to do because it's hard to get the data there. And it's hard to get the data there because the data runs on these old machines. It's stored in formats native to those old machines. And so just moving the data over to a new cloud and testing it is challenging. One of our banking customers, it takes them 3 months to convert each database from their old Unix systems to new Linux so they can put it in their cloud. 3 months per database, they have 9,000 databases.
Oh,
27,000 months of work.
I can't imagine that. We'll have to take a break and come back. We come back, talk about a new compliance engine that you have an offering coming up with and how it may apply with my listeners. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rick Kacha, Vice President of Strategy for Delphix. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Rick Kacha, Vice President of Strategy at a company called Delphix. You may not have heard of it. D-E-L-P-H-I-X. They help out my software developers who are listening, who are frustrated with different copies of testing, going to different environments. In my world, this is called D-E-V-O-P-S, DevOps. And if I turn to one of my colleagues and said that, they'd say, oh, everyone knows that. But not everyone knows that, does it? Tell us about DevOps and what this kind of specialized word means.
Sure. It's an interesting term. So historically, the way applications are built, you have people who develop it, and then you have people who operate these things. And the developers build the code, and they sort of throw it over the wall to the people who have to run it. And when it doesn't work and the operation guys have application outages, they sort of throw it back over the wall to the developers. And it means you have a lot of clunky software that sometimes dies and no one's happy. So DevOps is this movement to combine the two and say, let's shorten those, let's remove the wall between the people who build it and the people who run it. Let's shorten the cycles by which we build and test. And let's not make these two things separate. Let's build software that's designed to run smoothly. And the result should be better software delivered sooner with fewer outages.
Yeah, I saw the early inklings of that back in VoIP days when all of a sudden you'd have your VoIP on a Windows server and all of a sudden the develop opted to combine, and then you'd have to pull calls from that server on a VoIP phone system. So that was interesting. Tell me about another phrase called data masking. To understand your product, you really explain it in terms of data masking. What does that mean for my listeners?
Yeah, so masking is interesting because we all read about cybercrime and breaches, data breaches all the time. None of us, we all have sensitive information, health information, financial information. None of us want that to leak out or get breached, though it seems to happen a lot. And there are increasing regulations around protecting that. So one of the things that organizations and agencies do to protect your data is they do what's called masking it. So for example, they'll take your social security number and they'll substitute it with a fake social security number in all the copies of data that's given to the developers, the testers, and the support engineers and so forth, so that people who don't need to see your private information don't actually see it. So it sounds great, and it's actually not that hard to substitute, fake information for real information. What is hard is making sure that that's distributed to everyone who does the testing, the contractors and so forth. And Delphix has taken technology for data masking. We've combined it with our data virtualization to basically have a way to do secure or masked data delivery to all the interested parties in an application lifecycle. The developers who may be employees or may be outsourced contractors, the test engineers who also may be contractors or outsourced firms, the business analysts and the support engineers, you want to make sure all those people are working with masked or scrambled data, de-identified data, so your and my personal information doesn't leak out. That turns out to be fairly challenging, and Delphix has a unique way to do it. We've actually launched that in a new product that we launched last month.
Great. Is this the compliance engine?
It's our compliance engine, yes. And we found that there was an increasing number of, we started this with the banks, and now we're seeing it with the federal agencies. They're struggling with more regulations around data protection and data security, and they need a way to mask data easily. They also need a way to make sure it's masked or protected when it goes from their data centers to the cloud, because they're migrating to these cloud systems. Delphix can mask it on-premise and then move it to the cloud in a virtual and secure fashion so your data doesn't leak out.
Move to the cloud. You know, when Vivek Kundra sat in that chair a few years back, I thought about, well, moving to the cloud is one thing, but give me the nuts and bolts and practicals. And even data masking is something that many of my listeners may be familiar with. But the tricky part is making sure that the unmasked data matches the masked data at the end of the cycle, isn't it? I mean, that's the tricky part. Anyone can scramble something, but getting it back accurate, that's the tough part.
Yeah, so it's a couple of things, John. So you want to make sure when you mask the data that you have the correct rules, right? So I don't want to take your social security number and just put any random digits or letters in there because all the application code that expects it to be in a certain format in certain ranges is going to break. And now you're going to have a lot of errors and bugs that you shouldn't have, and it's due solely to the masking. So you need to be able to scramble the data in a way that makes sense and makes sense from business rules. Then you need to be able to make sure people don't see it. And then you need to be able to, as you said, go to the end of the cycle and make sure that the real data is in place. Delphix has our compliance engine has pieces that help automate that whole process.
You know, I'm kind of sensitive to what we have to pay software developers, and I don't like to have anyone have their feet up on a table waiting for something. And so what this solution offers, if I can put the pieces of the puzzle together, is you can take and virtualize data and make sure it is masked. But at the same time, my software developers can work on the code itself parallel at the same time. It's a parallel environment where we both reach the end line at the same time, huh? The finish line at the same time.
That's right. Think of it this way. If you go to any large agency or bank that has thousands of developers, I've got one that's got 10,000 developers, half of them are contractors.
Now, that's a lot of Mountain Dew.
Now, why not have them all work on the same monitor? Well, that'd be crazy. They all have a couple of monitors to do their work, but yet we make them all work on the same copy of the database. When they want an extra copy to be able to parallelize work, it takes them 10 to 12 weeks to get that copy. So if you've got contractors you're paying by the hour and these guys are sitting around for potentially weeks, it's a lot of money. If you can take that 10, 12 weeks and make it 12 minutes like Delphix does, you know, think of how much hard dollar savings you get and think of how much process acceleration, how much more efficient the organization is, how much more you can do. You can do much more with less.
Well, you know, if this interview has accomplished anything, it has reassured that some of my listeners who work for Department of Interior or Commerce, they're encountering the same problems as guys in banks do all the time. I mean, this is the same problem that just, I think, size and largeness, you know, Progressive Insurance Company, big organization, encounters some problems with this, different types of databases. And I don't know how to do it. I think it's amazing that we can take a database copy and have a virtual copy go out to development and then the testers. And, oh, what about compliance? There's a copy that compliance people got to have too.
Sure.
And it's got to be accurate because I would think for auditing and compliance, the accuracy's got to be important.
Yeah, well, think of it this way. It's risk, right? So now I take my systems and I want to move them to the cloud because government now is all about cloud first. So I move my system to the cloud and I turn the old system off. Great. Now a year later, the auditors show up and say, hey, we need to look at some particular report or data. Well, we don't have that anymore. We turn that system off and we migrate to the cloud. Uh-oh. I actually just had this with one customer. So what you can do with Delphix is then before you do the migration, you basically take a virtual copy, a snapshot of the whole system, turn the old system off, move to the cloud. Now your auditors come in and say, hey, we need this data. It becomes trivially easy to pull it out of, you know, virtual cold storage of Delphix, give the auditors what they need. So you get the benefits of speed and cost and cloud and so forth without some of the risk that comes from turning the old systems off. If you can't turn the old stuff off, you don't get any of the benefit of moving to the new stuff.
I was just thinking of the madhouse it would be for a large organization with 120, 150 testers and all these different databases floating around and coming back 2 years from now and saying, okay, I want the July 2014 auditing sample for FSMA compliance. That would be hard to even, I think the current situation has got to be too complicated to figure out. I don't know how you do it.
I would say in the current situation without Delphix, it's not hard, it's impossible. Simply the amount of data to keep and the over time is just too hard to do. With Delphix, that becomes really trivial because I have a virtual copy that sort of exists in no space. I can bring it back to the second any point I want.
When you think about databases, you think about this concept called ACID, which is an old school concept of atomicity and making sure it's accurate. And this is the little... In the back of my little mind, I'm going, yes, and all my developers going, oh, it's got to be accurate. It's got to be accurate. We get an ACID, John. Developers tell me about this all the time. So this accomplishes the task of an ACID database, doesn't it?
It does. So, ACID refers to are things transactionally consistent, right? If I you do a transact, you buy something, I take the money out of your banking account. You know, I want both of those to happen or none of those to happen. So Delphix has the capability to make sure that your virtual copies are transactionally consistent and they're fully functional, look like physical copies, transactionally consistent. They just operate in a tiny fraction of the space and you can create them in a tiny fraction of the time.
So I'd imagine someplace like Amazon.com, if I buy a book from Amazon.com and it gets shipped out and then I return it, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm getting credit for that $22.14, not the exact amount.
You don't want to lose, half of that transaction back the book but not get the money back. And so Delphix operates in a way that makes all of those existing technologies around us still operate in a consistent fashion.
Let's take a break and come back, talk a little about social media and blogs and how people can learn more about agile data management. I want to say agile software, agile data management. Yeah, that's a new phrase for me. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 15 AM. In the studio, Rick Kacha. He's the Vice President of Strategy at Delphix. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rick Kacha. He is the Vice President of Strategy for a company called Delphix. We grabbed him before he gets on a plane this afternoon to give you more information about some important products that he have that you might be able to take advantage of. The company is D-E-L-P-H-I-X, been around since about 2008. Started off with Oracle and helping software developers kind of reduce some problems with copying databases in Oracle. Got new products out there. But it's not just an Oracle company. All kinds of companies can use this. Is that right?
Absolutely. So we support a variety of databases. And with our most recent release, we actually support the ability to make virtual copies of all kinds of things, applications, application servers. So you can basically virtualize an entire application system, the database files, the app files, everything. Take a virtual copy, spin up 100 copies of it in a tiny fraction of the space and time.
But it's Amazon, SunGuard, IBM SoftLayer, private clouds, the whole group, huh?
That's right. So most people historically have run it in their private data centers, but as you know, more and more organizations are moving to the cloud, and that may be private clouds, like you said, or it could be public clouds like Amazon or VMware or IBM.
We were talking about one of our developers is going to be in Europe for 2 weeks, and he just, can I just get a 2-2 instance and fire it up and blah, 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 blah. Whoa. it wasn't even a concern. This gentleman can be in Hungary, he can be in China. You just fire up a T2 instance and run it. And then complete when you're done and move. It is a very agile type approach to running software. I mean, the concepts today are different, but I think it's building on what's happened in the last 10 years.
Well, I think what you just described is organizations are breaking apart in some ways. People don't have to all be central. They're all over the place. They operate in different ways. The same thing is happening with the infrastructure behind the scenes. It's breaking apart. Some's in a private cloud. Some's in a public cloud. Some is in a different data center. And so as things change and break apart, you need a way to manage that and manage, most importantly, the data behind that.
Many of my listeners read blogs. I have a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog, and I write about all kinds of stuff. I don't even imagine the stuff I write about. Do you write a blog? Is there a blog that maybe you can recommend my listeners can read to keep up with this technology?
Yeah, we actually have a very interesting blog at Delphix, and it's interesting. So it's at blog.delphix.com. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about our blog is if I look at most companies, the blog is sort of a corporate mouthpiece kind of thing. A lot of the posts are
our press releases.
Press
I've noticed
releases,
the same thing. What a pain.
And you know, people like me writing press releases. So we do it differently. So basically our corporate blog is primarily written by the engineers on a variety of technical topics, including in things they've learned internally in the products, new ways that they work to debug, new interesting sort of types of architecture. So we find, you know, personally, I don't read a lot of corporate blogs. I don't find them that interesting. I think the Delphix one is interesting because it's, you know, 95% of the posts are technical. So I think if you're interested in how this product works, interested in issues around managing data, and you don't want to get a lot of fluff, you know, the blog.delphix.com site is a good place to go. Our chief architects and most of our engineers write posts there. They primarily are the ones who post there.
You know, the best blogs I've seen are the ones that just answer direct questions. I mean, give me a direct question, you type it in. How do I move an instance of XYZ to XYZ? What's the easiest way to do it? Well, what we found is 1, 2, and 3. And many times the developers will not even focus on the company's products. They'll focus on best practice and safety, won't they? I mean, and that must drive executives crazy, but that's what they do.
No,
and it's
we
great.
Love it. We love it. I'll give you a great example. So the latest blog post, it happened just before I got on. I read read it just before I got on the plane, and one of our main performance engineer is awesome, has just finished a week of testing of a variety of databases running on Delphix in the Amazon cloud. And his whole blog and his whole test was not on Delphix. It was on how Amazon storage, different storage levels, perform and what that means for companies moving their databases to Amazon. And none of that's really Delphix related, but wow, you look at this and the performance graphs and the stuff he dug into and what it means and so forth is really interesting. Not about us, but pretty interesting to someone looking at Amazon.
Well, because some of my listeners are thinking, yeah, I may want to pop this up on Amazon. What about uptime considerations? I mean, tell me about uptime.
About,
I don't want to know
about
Delphix.
Is it going to respond? And this is a great kind of blog to go look and learn those things. And it's not just Delphix tooting its own horn.
And I think that's so great and informational because I think what my listeners wanted, you know, there's a lot of ways to solve problems here, but they, you know, may have a limited budget and they may not... they may have their hands tied more than commercial organizations. And so they're looking at new ways and what's the cheapest way they can do this. And if they have 15, 20, 30 copies of a database, 100 copies of a database, well, you know, that's just that's a burden on the infrastructure, isn't it? That's a whole lot of servers spinning up.
The cost is unreal. You know, you think of it this way. So pretty common for a customer to have, for one of their main systems, a 10 terabyte size database in production. They make 10 copies of that, right, for dev test. So that means it's 100 terabytes of copied data.
That's a whole truckload of Bernoulli boxes.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, $10,000 a terabyte, so you've got about $1 million of storage there. You put in Delphix, we take out, you know, 95% of that. I just removed, you know, we just removed $950,000 of infrastructure spend just around one app.
And that's just the infrastructure. What about the salaries and the people that got to manage it?
Right.
What
so
about the backup? What,
of course. Yeah, right. We find that the storage cost is a fraction of it. Because like you said, John, you've got storage administrators and managers who approve stuff and, you know, processes and DBAs, all the stuff. It wipes out the cost of storage. So if you can make all of that go away and free that money up for more important things, you can really, you know, make the budget go towards innovation and not just infrastructure.
And I've been in enough agencies to know that what happens is, let's say someone waltzes in and does a little audit and there's a problem. And what you're going to do is if your best worker is Janet, you can say, okay, Janet, I'm going to pull you from that and you got to help solve this problem with this audit and find out those files from 2 years ago because we know where they're at. And she's going to say, yeah, but I'm doing this thing over here that you want me to do. And they say, no. So what happens is, if you don't organize your files databases correctly, you got to pull your top talent off one, throw them. And what they're doing is they're just patching holes and they're not making progress and the boat's not going forward.
John, this is a great point I think most people don't realize, though most CIOs will understand, which their projects, their big application projects are always part of a portfolio of projects. And those things share the same resources. And if one project goes off the tracks, it's not isolated. Those same people who are there, it affects the other projects too. So really being able to cut time and cost across all of your projects is important because you don't want one going off the tracks and taking all the other projects down too.
Yeah, earlier we talked about Legos, but I think this is more dominoes where you have a pretty good organization and you got talent in the right spot and you're making progress and the boat's moving forward. And then all of a sudden an audit comes in, you got to take top talent off, you put on something else, you spin your wheels and you don't make any success at all. I went to your LinkedIn profile, and now on LinkedIn, there's 1.9 million groups. There's actually a LinkedIn group on agile data interactions and management. Isn't that strange?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's data is important, and handling data in a more agile way is important. Everyone wants to be more agile, so you know, there are groups in this area on LinkedIn. There's lots of interesting groups in LinkedIn.
In traditional agile software development, like Scrum or Lean, we're going to talk about, they incorporate testing with the developers and the customers as well. Does this assist in that, or is testing kind of, because we talked about testers earlier, is this a separate category altogether?
No, so this is part of that. So agile development is all about short cycles, fast development, and fast testing so you can iterate quickly. But in practice, data tends to be the anchor. If you want 2 week development and test cycles, but it takes you 3 weeks to set up the database to test on, well, then you're clearly not going to have 2 week cycles. So it's all about making the data management fast enough that you can actually go on these fast, agile little development and test cycles.
I got to use an impressive phrase, and I'm sure maybe someone in the audience can impress by these two words. The words are referential integrity. And what does that mean? And what does that mean for my listeners?
Well, you know, for most of your listeners, it means nothing.
I know that, but there's a few out there that want to pull your brain.
Yeah, but basically it's all about how do I make sure that the data in my databases, when I copy it for testing and dev, when I mask it and secure it, when I move it to the cloud, how do I make sure that it's all consistent, that it doesn't, that I don't lose links across it? I want to make sure that my address in one database is correctly linked to my name and my account balance in a different database. And when I start to use technologies like Delphix and virtualize my databases, I want to ensure that those kind of things, the referential integrity, is maintained. And of course, we do that. We make it transactionally consistent, and we maintain all the links between the systems.
Yeah, it's. I'm sure there are people that know more about referential integrity than I do, but we have a wide range of audience. Some people don't know much about databases. Some can run circles around all kinds of different databases that are out there. So large companies use you. Facebook, Comcast, Macy's, a lot of big people, hmm?
Yeah, we have pretty much the market leader in every industry. So I've got well over 100 of the Fortune 500 who use this in a significant way. And I guess it makes sense because those are companies that have a lot of applications. They have a lot of data. They have, you know, expensive developers. They have a lot of contractors. And if you can move the needle for them and make their processes move faster, help them bring their applications to market more quickly with less errors, you know, you can really change their business.
We have to take a pause for some of our business, some commercial breaks here. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM in studio. Rick Kacha, Vice President of Strategy at Delphix. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Rick Kacha. He's the Vice President of Strategy at a company called Delphix, D-E-L-P-H-I-X. I was all over your website this morning. I was on your Twitter feed and everything else. So what is your company's Twitter feed anyway? What's the handle on?
It's Delphix, so it's @ D-E-L-P-H-I-X.
Yeah, and very active, by the way. All
very
kinds
active.
Of links. And I was going through your tweets this morning, and I went back to the company page, you know, the home site, and a lot of white papers. Anything of interest for my leaders, listeners that may be able to learn more about your product?
Yeah, I've got a new one that people may find pretty interesting. So on the homepage itself, there's a nice little one-minute video about how the technology works. But we've also got a link to a new third-party report from the analyst firm IDC, which is one of the biggest analyst firms. And they actually did a research study with a bunch of Delphix customers on their own and put together kind of the results in a model and found that on average, the customers got full payback in 4 months. So they put this in, and 4 months later, it's fully paid for itself.
Oh, so Rick, you leave the room, and I'm going to ask Janet about your product.
Right.
Okay,
that's
Rick? And right. Down the hall. No, further down the hall.
That's right. I wasn't
okay,
on the pause.
Okay, now is Rick lying?
And we're pretty happy with the results. There's a free copy of that report available on the site. You can just go there and get it.
It's almost like a consumer report reporting on something independent and saying, well, no, this is what happens, what didn't happen. And we looked at these different options, and this seemed to work. And I think that's all my listeners want. They just want to, you know, get an idea of something new that can help them figure out what's going on. Many of my listeners are active on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @RayGilray. So you can, in fact, you have a Twitter handle yourself, don't you? What's yours?
So mine's rcaccia, R-C-A-C-C-I-A. I actually post more, tweet more on the Delphix account more than my own, but I do my own as well.
Yeah, I do five different companies' tweets, and I don't do many of my own either. I do for many different organizations, so that's the way it is. Over the years, I've interact with a lot of listeners, and they go, yeah, I heard that interview with Joe Blow, and you know, I kind of wanted to kind of smartphone he had. So I started asking these questions because people are going, California guy, is it all Apple? Is it Android? What's he into? And so I've come up with a scientific 10-question test to find out if you're, in fact, a card-carrying nerd.
Uh-oh.
And you better score high in this San Francisco, Palo Alto, everything else. So the question is, and I'm going to switch these questions around just to keep it interesting. I break into your house tonight. How many desktop computers do we see floating around your house?
Oh, does a laptop count as a desktop?
No, just a desktop.
None.
Well, that's the right answer. How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
In the last year, I've purchased 3 cell phones.
3. He's getting all the right answers so far. And we know you have your own Twitter feed, R-C-A-C-C-I-A. We know that. Okay. And do you have your own blog?
I blog on the Delphix blog. So blog.delphix.com
/
rcaccia is mine.
And do you use any online personal backup services?
Oh, let's see. I have, I use Google Drive as a backup. And then we have an Apple Airport Express, and then I also have a separate NAS in the house.
Now, that's the right answer. When someone says, I have my own NAS in the house, just for fun, that's the right answer. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I currently have an Apple. I switched over from an Android Moto X a couple months ago.
And what app have you used most in the last 30 days?
Uber.
Uber, yeah, we were using it earlier. I mean, that's right. Okay, I break into your house this afternoon, and how many tablet devices do I see floating around?
Oh, tablets. Let's see. Six.
Six? You're getting high in this one.
More tablets than people in the house. For sure.
I think we do in my house, too. Yeah, I think we do.
Yeah.
Now my kids are all moved out. And what social networking sites you active in?
Well, let's see. Facebook more for personal, and then LinkedIn heavily for business.
And your last book read, was it electronic or paper?
Last book was electronic.
Well, he's going pretty high in this test. When I run it through my mini computer in the basement, we'll find out it's a Wang
tape
PC.
Drives, right?
And my Bernoulli box.
Hey, Bernoulli,
I'll send you a copy of
my tape drives are corrupt.
And my tape drives are back. What should I do? And it's the only copy I have. It's the gold copy that's corrupt. Now what?
The mouse ate my tape backups.
Oh, it's always fascinating. So, you know, I've done interviews with virtualization, virtualized servers. Then I did interviews with virtualized desktops. And then we talked about containers and virtualized environments. And this whole little tiny concept of virtualizing software that started in the mid-70s. I mean, I started with IBM earlier than that. It's really expanded to actually now it's practical. All of a sudden it's, you know, 7-8 years ago, people started using VMware. They said, it saves money and time. It's a no-brainer. Everything's now virtualized. So this is just another application of virtualization, applying it to save money, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think people have applied this to other areas. It just hadn't been applied to data management before, and certain things had to get to a certain point where you could actually make this work, and a few years ago, they reached that point.
Yeah, that's great. Where do you think it's headed? What do you think the federal government's going to do in the next 4 or 5 years as far as virtualization goes? Are they going to adapt? Are they going to resist this because it's too dangerous? Or are they going to make the change?
No, I think they'll make the change. You know, there's a couple of tailwinds behind us there. There's this push to consolidate data centers, shut down thousands of those. No way you're going to do that without virtualizing the data. It just takes too long. Obviously, budgets continue to shrink, so there's no way you're going to manage this kind of data without virtualizing it to bend the cost curve. And then, you know, just want to generally be more responsive and be more flexible. And it's hard to do that when your data is stuck on old boxes and you can't get it where it needs to go.
When we started this interview, I talked about Oracle. And I'm sure that people are like me, scratching their heads going, let me see now. Well, I would imagine that Oracle has a utility, or they bought a small company like yours that can accomplish this task as well. Does IBM, Microsoft, Oracle, these companies you work with, I mean, have they built this mousetrap too?
No. There isn't anyone else who does something directly like this. To make this work, it's interesting. You had to basically combine concepts from database management, from virtualization, and from storage and file systems. You know, we have some of the advanced file system engineers, you know, in the country and the world working at Delphix. They've been there for years. We've recruited some of Oracle's best database engineers. So you had to combine certain sets of skills. Those typically don't live in any of the big companies in this same way. So we had to start a company and combine things in a way that didn't exist anywhere else.
So I imagine there's patents involved, huh? Is that right?
Lots and lots of patents. I mean, if you look at some of our engineers, just the engineers themselves, each of those will have 20, 30 patents to their own name.
Your president of the company's got 8 patents,
he's
too.
He's filed for. So there's a lot of patents around Delphix. You know, the biggest competitor is not another company. It's people not realizing that there's a massively better way to do things. You know, it's the status quo.
If you look at virtualization 8 years ago, people were resistant to it. And then caught on, and we caught on the federal government, caught on the commercial world as well, because they have the same kind of pressures to reduce cost. And I'm trying to predict, you know, what the hangups are going to be. Are people going to say, well, no, I'm just not comfortable with a virtualized copy of a data. You're comfortable with a virtualized server, aren't you? Well, yeah, I'm just not comfortable with that. Rick, nothing personal, Rick, but I'm just not, don't want to make that leap. I want it to be...
It's very personal, Rick. I don't like you personally, so we're not going to use Delphix.
Go down the hall and talk about you.
So here's how it goes. So I typically talk about all the benefits from Delphix. Things that took weeks now take minutes, you know, costs that took millions now cost, you know, one hundredth of that. And the common reaction from a CIO is, oh, that sounds like magic. It couldn't possibly be true. I say, well, okay, fair enough. 10 years ago when the VMware guys told you about virtual servers, you probably thought that was magic too. Today, how many servers do you physical servers do you actually buy for your data center? And they go, oh, good point.
Yeah.
So it's that level of transformation, but for your data as opposed to your servers, that's happening with Delphix.
So what a company like IBM, obviously they're one of your partners, would they resist this? I mean, there's a benefit to IBM to selling more hardware to store those extra copies of data, aren't there? I mean, there's a benefit to them to have you spend more money with IBM.
Well, there are a couple things happening with someone like IBM. They're a customer of ours, and they're also a partner of ours. IBM's a big database vendor. They're, I think, the number three biggest database vendor. They have lots of customers who make lots of copies. They would love that to be more efficient. IBM also is getting into the cloud in a big way. To get their customers to move from their data centers to the cloud, they have to convert from old IBM hardware to new IBM hardware, and Delphix makes that easy too.
I talked about it earlier, an easy transition to the cloud. So you can test out an environment before you make the move, and then all of a sudden not have mud on your face when it doesn't work. The dependencies break. That's great. Well, thanks for the interview, Rick. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest today was Rick Kacha, Vice President of Strategy at Delphix. You get more information at delphix.com.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Like Federal News Radio on Facebook for a look at some of the top federal stories each day. Plus, we'll give you a taste of what goes on behind the scenes. Find us at facebook.com/federalnewsradio.